The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
All right. If you do have a copy of God's Word this morning, I invite you to go ahead and open it. You can make your way over to the book of Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. We've been working through the Ten Commandments this summer as a part of our series through the entire book of Exodus, and we come this morning to the eighth commandment, which is found in verse 15 of Exodus chapter 20, which simply reads like this: do not steal. Do not steal. I want to remind you, when we started this summer series, the summer look at the Ten Commandments, I said that one of my goals for this summer series is that we would be able to honestly say with King David from Psalm 119 that we delight in the commandments of God. Not that we just tolerate them, but that we delight in them, right? That the people of God should not view his commandments as a necessary burden that we must bear, but instead should view them as this vision of life. A life that brings joy, a life that brings blessing, a life that brings peace and satisfaction. And we said that the reason for that is that the Ten Commandments are revealing to us the very heart of God, the very nature of God. That one way we know what God is like is by looking at His law, looking at these Ten Words, and seeing His heart, seeing His character. And therefore, by embracing these Ten Commandments, what's happening is that the image of God is being restored in us. So, for example, a couple weeks ago, Pastor Keith reminded us, as we looked at the prohibition against murder, that commandment, that prohibition, reveals that the Lord is a God of life, right? He's a God who loves life. We saw last Sunday with the prohibition against adultery that word revealed that the Lord is a God of faithful love and fidelity. This is what He's like. And again today, as we look now at this prohibition against stealing, we're seeing that this God is a God who gives, that His heart is bent toward generosity in the life of people. And so when we likewise become a people who love life, when we become a people who are faithful in our love and in marriage, when we become givers rather than takers, what's happening is that the image of God is being restored in us. Now, I want you to contrast those qualities with the qualities of our spiritual adversary, whom, if you'll remember, Jesus told us comes as a thief intending to steal, kill, and destroy. Which means that the Ten Commandments present us with a choice. We can either reflect and image the Lord our God as a people of life, a people of love, a people of generosity, or we can image and reflect the enemy as a people who carry contempt and anger, a people of betrayal and stinginess. Of course, we know that true life and joy and satisfaction comes in living out the purpose for which we were created. And we have been created to image the Lord our God. And that's exactly what these commandments are doing. Each one of these 10 commandments are intended to protect and restore the image of God in us. And so we can delight in the law of God. We can delight in these commandments. Now, today we do. We turn our attention specifically to this word against stealing. Of course, this commandment assumes implicitly the right for people to own private property. Otherwise, there would be no point to prohibit the stealing of property or possessions. A part of being created in the image of God is our ability to own things, to own stuff in a way that is distinct and unique from animals in the world, for example. But as Christians, we understand that God is the supreme owner of everything in the world. It's impossible for God to steal, because God owns everything, okay? And so our earthly ownership is in reality a stewardship of what God has freely given to us, okay? So to steal that which belongs to someone else is to deify oneself. It is an assumption that says that we have the authority to determine what we and other people ought to possess. So what I want to do this morning is I want to start by making sure that we understand the scope of this eighth word, the scope of what stealing means. What does it mean to steal? And I want to start there, because if we only think of stealing as, you know, going across the street and breaking into our neighbor's house and, you know, taking their stuff for ourselves, if we only think of stealing in that specific way, we're probably going to give ourselves a pass on this one, right? Because I doubt that many of us are in the habit of petty theft and larceny or shoplifting, whatever it might be. And so you think, so I take this one off, you know, not super relevant for me. But as we're seeing with all of these 10 commandments, I want us to maybe see some of the more subtle manifestations and forms that the sin of stealing can take in our lives. And so what I want to do is I want to think of stealing under two primary headings here. Two primary headings, all right? The first is this. You know, what does it mean to steal? Pretty basic here, but bear with me. First is, stealing means taking what belongs to someone else. Stealing means taking what belongs to someone else. Now, of course, that can apply to tangible property, and it applies regardless of the value of the property. So taking supplies from your employer or from the hotel where you're staying is still stealing, even though the value of that property is relatively small. Perhaps the most egregious form of taking what belongs to someone else is what the Bible refers to as man-stealing, where that which is stolen is an actual person. It's the person himself. Many forms of slavery throughout the history of the world have been examples of man-stealing, where someone is stolen and taken from a homeland and treated then as the property and possession of another person. We see the same type of idea or thing happening horrifically in modern days in human trafficking, where that which is stolen is a person. Let the people of God refuse to justify such actions, and let us instead be a people and a voice against these types of injustices in the world. So it applies to tangible things and property, but it also applies to intangible property, right? Plagiarism, for example, is taking the thoughts or ideas of someone else and treating them as if they are your own. Glory can be stolen, right? You can steal someone's credit where you are taking the credit that belongs to someone else, and someone's giving you credit for something they did, and it feels kind of nice, and I'll just go ahead and take that credit for myself. And what I want you to see is that whether it's something tangible or intangible, stealing means taking what belongs to someone else. But let's think about it under a different heading also. Secondly, stealing also means withholding what is due to someone else. Okay, withholding what is due to someone else. The Bible also refers to this as theft, as stealing. When you owe something to a person or to an entity and refuse to give it, this is stealing. For example, being a bit dishonest on your tax returns so that you're actually paying less in taxes than what you rightfully and legally owe is a form of stealing. You're withholding that which is due. Jesus said very clearly, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Debt can fall into this category. Taking on debts that you cannot repay. Leaving debts unpaid when it's in your power to pay them is a form of stealing. The Bible doesn't forbid every form or kind of debt, but when you borrow money and don't repay it according to the agreement for which it was borrowed or a revised agreement, that which has been borrowed becomes that which is stolen. I think in this category would also fall subtle actions such as the theft of time in the workplace, right? If your employer pays you to work 40 hours a week, and instead you work 35 hours a week and spend 5-10 hours a week on your phone or playing games or whatever it might be, you're stealing from your employer. You owe a certain amount of work and labor that you are withholding them. Okay. A final example I thought of, I think falls under this heading that we see clearly in the scriptures is failing to give back to the Lord. Did you know that the Bible talks about that in the category of robbery, right? So Malachi chapter 3, verse 8, the prophet Malachi, God says, will man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? He says, in your tithes and contributions. You're not bringing me the tithes and offerings that I've asked you to bring. Certainly not my intention here to nuance and unpack the nuances of giving as a new covenant people, and I'm certainly not intending to say that if you only give 9% of your income to the Lord, then you're stealing 1% from the Lord. That's not, I don't think, the point. I think the principle and point of the text is that God owns everything. He owns everything, not just 10%. He owns 100%. And one way that he has called his people to worship him is to give back as an act of worship, an act of gratitude, to give back a portion of that which they have been given. And so when we refuse to offer our worship through giving, when we just fail to give, we're withholding from God something that he is due. God calls this theft. He calls this robbery. He calls it stealing. Okay. So my goal here is just to see, it's broader. The idea is broader than just shoplifting, all right? It can take the form of taking what belongs to someone else, tangible or intangible, or withholding that which is due to someone else. But if I could, I want us to, pop up the hood here for a minute and take a look underneath. Because, sometimes when your car is doing something it shouldn't be doing, in order to see what's going on, you got to pop up the hood and you got to look within. What's making my car pull to the right? And so I want us to pop up the hood and look underneath the behavior of theft, the behavior of stealing. And I want us to consider what's going on in our hearts. What might be happening in our hearts that would lead us to steal? Whatever form it might take. What is at the root? What is at the root of stealing? A few thoughts I'll offer here of potential sins of the heart that might manifest in the act of stealing. One is, stealing may reveal a heart of faithlessness. A heart of faithlessness. This is a heart that says, I don't trust God to provide what I need. I don't trust Him. And so I've got to take from someone else, or I've got to borrow money promising repayment but having no real idea for how I can repay it, because I have to provide for me. I have to survive. Right? The one who does not trust God to provide for you is the one who will be tempted to steal. Okay? So stealing may reveal a failure to trust God. Another possibility, though, stealing may reveal a heart of discontentment. That's another heart issue that may be going on under the hood there. A heart that says, I need what belongs to others in order to be happy. Is it not a heart of discontentment that would lead someone to rack up credit card debt that they cannot repay because they need to acquire more and more and more? They feel to be happy, to be truly content. Is it not a heart of discontentment that would lead someone to steal glory, to steal credit from another person? I'm going to take credit that this person is due because I need that praise. I need that notoriety. I need that recognition in order to be content and happy. Might it not be a heart of discontentment that would say, I can't give to God because I need all that I have to feel happy, safe, and secure? So the heart that is content in Christ, whether you have much or little, is a heart that will be less tempted to steal from others. It may reveal a heart of faithlessness. It may reveal a heart of discontentment. And finally, stealing may reveal a heart of pride. A heart of pride. A heart that says, I deserve what God has given to them. I deserve it more than they do. It's an inflated view of self. My employer doesn't deserve all my work this week. It's okay for me to take what belongs to them, because if they're too simple-minded to know that I'm taking advantage of them, that's on them. I deserve what I've taken because I'm superior in my mind and in some way. Guys, I want to remind us that the Ten Commandments confront us with the reality of our own heart deficiencies, the reality of our own hearts, right? Okay, God speaks every one of these words because He knows that we're capable of these sins. This is our heart. Ray Ortlund asked a question. He put it this way. I thought this was helpful. He said, what kind of people need to be told you shall not steal? So what does this say about the fact that God has to say this? What does this say about the human heart? What kind of people have to be told you shall not steal? He answers, people who will be unfair to one another without even realizing it. We need to be alerted to our own unjust and grasping impulses, which have a deep hold on us. This is why it's really important that we have the ability to diagnose the root of stealing in our lives, because it is, right, it is from the heart that we speak. It is from the heart that we behave, and it is at the level of the heart that we find healing in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Okay? Please don't miss this, that the only... It is only the gospel. It is only the gospel of Jesus Christ that can transform a heart of faithlessness into a heart that truly trusts the Lord. Only the gospel can do that. Okay? Only the gospel of Jesus Christ can transform a heart that is discontent into a heart that is satisfied, regardless of whether you have much or little. Only the gospel can do that. Only the gospel can take a heart of pride and transform it into a heart of selfless, you before me type of humility. Okay, the law has no power to do that, to save, to transform. The law exposes, the law reveals, but the gospel of Jesus Christ has the power to transform our hearts and lead us into a new way of life, not just modify our behavior so that we're ethically a better people. That's not what the gospel is about. It's about an internal transformation of heart that heals us at the deepest level of our souls. Okay. That's exactly where I want to pivot now. We've unpacked the fruit of stealing and the root of stealing, but I want us to consider positively, what kind of life is God calling his people to embrace through this eighth word, okay? As we look at the eighth word, what is the vision of life that God is giving us here? Okay. Let's remember, the eighth command reveals another way that we can be like God, because it reveals the heart and character of God. Okay. Let's unpack that for just a minute. Go back to Ray Ortland. He asked another question here I found helpful. He says, he's asking, what does this teach us about God now? He says, what kind of person, that's capital P person, what kind of amazing person would say to us, you shall not steal? What does this commandment say about the person who's speaking it? Listen to his answer. He says, only a just and generous person who can be fully trusted, who would never rob us or defraud us, who would never lie or cheat, who would never hold out on us wrongly, who is not out for himself, who feels no need and no appetite, but only overflowing kindness and abundance. That is the heart and the character of our God. And it is through this eighth word that God is inviting his people to embrace that same kind of heart. That the eighth word calls us beyond merely a life that refuses petty theft. It calls us further than that. It calls us up. It calls us to be a people who give, a people who share, a people of honesty and integrity, a people of radical generosity from the inside out. It doesn't merely prohibit us from being takers. It calls us to be like God, to be givers. You know, the Apostle Paul picks up on that. And his letter to the Ephesians in chapter 4. Ephesians 4, verse 28, listen to what Paul says. He's interacting with the eighth commandment here. He says, let the thief no longer steal. That's the eighth commandment. Let the thief no longer steal. But then he goes on to say, instead, he is to do honest work with his own hands. Why? So that he has something to share with anyone in need. That's the heart of God. The eighth word calls us to embrace a life of giving, of sharing, of generosity, because this is the heart of our God. Is that not what we see in the book of Acts? Well, you read the book of Acts and you're like, this is an alien people from another world. They are an otherworldly type of people, this new kingdom people that are selling their possessions and sharing with any who has need, right? Just this radical otherworldly generosity and sharing. It's the politic of the kingdom. We got to be careful sometimes that we don't confuse an earthly politic with a kingdom politic, okay? God has not given earthly governments to mandate and force generosity, to seize private possession and redistribute in an equal kind of way. That is a political ideology, pretty common in the world, doesn't align with the biblical vision of government. Most evangelicals, I think, understand that earthly politic, the right to own private property, but we can't confuse that with our kingdom politic, because God has not called us as only a people who live as a part of an earthly politic, but he has called us to be a people who live by a kingdom politic. That the church of Jesus Christ should stand out as a people of radical generosity and sharing and helping and giving. It's a politic of the kingdom that transcends the ways of this world that causes us to shine as light in a dark place. And it's children of the kingdom. It's children of the kingdom who can practice that type of radical generosity, because we are the ones who have been made content in Jesus. I don't need to hold on to everything I have to be happy. I have Jesus. We can trust our Father to provide for our needs. I can give. I can share. I can be open-handed because my Father has got me. He will provide. Guys, this is why we need the law of God written on our hearts. Not just on tablets of stone or inks on a piece of paper in front of us. We need this law written on our hearts. We need a transformation of heart that only the gospel of Jesus Christ can provide. Apart from that transformation of heart, we live in a place of slavery, a place of bondage, which inevitably produces a mindset of scarcity. I want to just pan out for a minute and remember the trajectory of the book that we're in, of Exodus, the narrative here. In Exodus, God is teaching his people how to live as sons of God, because they have spent their entire lives living like slaves. Listen, a life of slavery is not marked by a life of contentment, trust, and generosity. Taskmasters, they don't give, they extract, they demand, they deprive. This is the life of slavery. Slaves must protect themselves and survive, even if it means taking from other people. And so now God is having to teach these ex-slaves, you don't have to live that way any longer. I've set you free from slavery, and I've made you my sons and my daughters. You belong to me. Okay, this is what God does for us through the gospel of Jesus Christ, so that we no longer have to live in bondage to this mindset of scarcity and stinginess and selfishness and protecting ourselves and, you know, looking out for ourselves and depriving others in this endless search of contentment and security. He's freed us from that type of life. And he's made us sons of God in Christ. And seeing that, seeing the gospel, believing the gospel, that is the key to living this life of generosity, living this life of contentment, living this life of trust. You see that? The gospel's the key here. When I look at the cross and I see God's generosity toward me, that I see that God gave his the most valuable person to die in my place. The death that I should have died. When I see through the gospel that God has blessed me with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places, when I see the true nature of God, that he's not like a taskmaster who extracts and deprives me, but instead gives me good gifts that I did not merit or earn, when I see the generosity of God toward me, it transforms my heart. It produces within my soul both a desire and a power to live that same life of generosity toward other people. It removes my fear of not having enough. It removes my pride that says, I deserve more. I deserve what they have. It removes my discontentment that says, I need what other people have in order to be happy. Simply put, it makes us more like God. Only the gospel can do that. Only the gospel can take takers and transform them and make them into givers. So I'll ask you this morning, are you convicted this morning, maybe by some of the more subtle forms of stealing that you've seen in your own life? If that's where you are today, confess that to the Lord. Repent of that. Turn from that. And ask God to show you how he intends for you to make restitution for that which you have taken. Isn't Zacchaeus a great example of that? He lived his life as a charlatan, a thief who extracted and stole and exploited, and he met Jesus, and it changed his life. He confessed, and he repented, and he paid back fourfold what he had taken from others. He made restitution, and he did so with joy and gladness because God touched his life. Perhaps you're here today and you say, I've lived as an honest person. I really don't struggle with stealing, and I've lived with the utmost integrity and honesty. But maybe God has provoked your spirit this morning to grow in this life of generosity. And maybe you're seeing that this generous life that God calls his children to live goes beyond just being a person of honesty, integrity. He refuses to steal, but it embraces the heart of this generous God. If that's where you're at today, I just want to encourage you to trust Jesus. Trust Jesus when he says, you know, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. Give, share. There's joy there. So much more joy than, you know, I got to hold on. I got to look out for myself. There's greater grace and abundance and fullness of life when we live as givers, because it's when we do so that we bear the image of our Father. If you recognize that you're struggling with trusting God in the area of money, or you're struggling in the area of contentment today, I just want to encourage you to give that to the Lord. Ask him to help you to come in and to just give you a greater measure of transformation in your heart and victory. Okay. And then if you're here this morning and you don't know Christ, you're not a follower of Christ, but you recognize, you know, this life of slavery that we've been talking about, that's my life. I'm in bondage. I'm in slavery. I've been living in bondage to sin. My word for you today is simply come to Jesus. Come to Jesus. Jesus came to save sinners. He came to set them free. You know, he does that even for thieves. Ever wonder how Jesus would respond to a lifelong thief? What would Jesus say if a lifelong thief turned to him for salvation? Ever wonder that? You don't have to wonder. You know, Jesus was crucified between two thieves. And moments before he died, one of those thieves turned to Jesus and cried out for help and salvation. And Jesus looked at him and he said, "Today you'll be with me in paradise. I welcome you. Come to me, even the thief." Look to the cross, and you will find both the forgiveness that you need when you fall short of the eighth command, and you will find the power to live a life of generosity. This life that the world will look at and say, "That's radical. That's otherworldly."